Welcome to Night Sky Tourist, a place to learn the night sky, have fun with its ancient stories, meet astronomers and dark sky advocates, and fall in love with the dark. I'm Vicki Dirksen, your host and author of the website and blog, nightskytourist.com. If you've never visited the website, I invite you to stop by after the podcast. Check out some of the great blog articles, browse through the resource page, and sign up for the newsletters. The newsletters have great content that is exclusive for subscribers. Are you ready for an adventure under the night sky? Let's jump right in. Ireland. It's well known as the Emerald Isle, the home of Guinness beer, land of the Celts, and birthplace of St. Patrick's Day. But it also has spectacular dark skies to lure stargazers. Now, I'm really sad to admit that my only experience in Ireland was a change of planes in Dublin on my way to Mongolia in 1993. I've never actually set foot on the soil or seen a star in the sky. So this interview is just as important for me to gather information about planning a trip there as it is for you. My guest is Georgia McMillan, the development officer for Mayo Dark Sky Park in Ireland, where she's working to get the park certified by Dark Sky International. She began her dark sky journey in 2013 at ATU Castlebar, and she's a founding member of the Friends of Mayo Dark Skies community group. She's a board member of Dark Sky Ireland NGO, which seeks to restore and protect dark skies across the entire island. She's currently completing her PhD on dark skies and community engagement at the University of Galway. Let's take a journey together to Ireland on this episode and join me in welcoming to the podcast, Georgia McMillan. Thank you for joining us on the Night Sky Tourist podcast all the way from Ireland. I'm really excited to have you here today.
Thank you for having me. It's lovely to be invited.
So you're part of a group called Friends of Mayo Dark Skies. And tell us a little bit about that, your involvement in it. I believe you're one of the founders. So tell us about it.
Yeah, it's a community group. So we are all volunteers and it came about nearly 10 years ago, about 9 years ago, actually. So we were working on the accreditation for our nearest national park to become a dark sky park. And it was just something I discovered through doing some research as an undergrad about, I've came across dark skies and wilderness and those kind of projects and met some like-minded people in the locality. And we put together the Friends of Mayo Dark Skies, which combines different little towns. And we are quite rural, even by Irish standards. So our town of Newport, which is where I live, is a population of about 850 people. Then Newport and our neighbouring town, Mulrani and Ballycroy, a little village, we're the three communities that surround that national park. And that's why I suppose we became the Friends of the Mayo Dark Skies.
So, and what national park is that?
So it's called Wild Nafin National Park. It's one of the youngest in Ireland. We've only six in total. It's size-wise, again, by US standards, it's not that big, but it's 15,000 hectares. And it's what we call Atlantic bog, which is peatlands and heath, mountainous, stretches from the top of the mountains to the Atlantic Ocean. And it also more recently expanded to include a forestry, which was formerly a commercial forestry. So it's dark and it's remote by our standards. And we were very lucky that the National Park saw the merit in dark skies and recognized it firstly to work with a community group. And now because it's an official dark sky park, they had to take on the management for it and the I suppose the authority of keeping the lighting compliant, so they've taken effectively ownership of the management of that dark sky resource, and it's supported by the community.
Europe tends to be a really brightly lit continent. If I look at light pollution maps, it's like the eastern United States, where it's just one big mass of light. And so it's really cool to hear that Ireland has some really nice dark areas. Can you tell us what the night skies are like in Ireland? And I'm sure that it varies according to where there are bigger cities, but where would we find the brightest and the darkest skies there?
Yeah, I mean you're right. It varies, I suppose, by economic growth. I mean, you mentioned, Europe is pretty bright, and you've only got to look at those maps you refer to, light pollution mapped up info, and you start to see, where is the brightest place in Europe? Well, it's going to be where all the money is. So start looking at places like, Belgium, Luxembourg. Benelux is very, very bright. But then if you start looking at other countries like Germany, it's less so, because they've looked at the policy. Even though they're, economically they would be up there, they've looked at different policy development. So in Ireland, when you look at our map from the night sky, we have it's obviously Dublin is our biggest source of light pollution. But what we've noticed over the last 20 years, when you compare satellite imagery from, say, 1997 to the 2015, 2016, you'll see the growth of light pollution has, massively spread across right across our country. So, and that's partly due to our housing development and how that has changed our road development and infrastructure, and the topography. So if you start to look to the west coast, so those counties that border the Atlantic coast, so there's where I live is County Mayo. It's on the western seaboard. There is nothing beyond us, so until you get to Canada and the States. So which means that the lighting, again, due to some partly due to economic reasons, but also topography and population, so the lighting has not caught up, thankfully for us, to the same extent. So Mayo would be a very good place to stargaze, as would other counties on the western seaboard. So Kerry, in the southwest, has a dark sky reserve. There's some beautiful stargazing to be done in Connemara, even though they're not an official place, according to the Dark Sky Association. But it's all down to, is it dark or isn't it? And there is quite a few places on the western seaboard of Ireland that are.
Do you know of any observatories or planetariums across the country there?
I do. First of all, observatories. There's an interesting partnership going on at the moment between three historical observatories in Ireland, on the island of Ireland. So that includes Northern Ireland. There's a project to link up the historic observatories of Dunsink, which is near to Dublin, of Birr Castle, which is a little bit closer to the Midlands, but very historic. It's where the Leviathan telescope was, which was a huge, for its time, it was the biggest one in the world, and it was installed by the then Lord Ross, who also observed the Whirlpool Galaxy for the first time. So he drew that. He thought it was a nebula, but it turned out to be, late we realized it was a galaxy. So some fantastic foundational science going on there. And then there's Armagh in Northern Ireland, which has an amazing history. I think it's the longest running, consistently running observatory. So it didn't stop through any, wars or, any other crises. And Dunsink has a similar timeline, but so the three of them, are forming this partnership. They are really prominent in Ireland's astronomical heritage. There are other observatories. So let me think now. Down in Cork, in the southwest, there will be Blackrock Castle Observatory, a more recent one in terms of the astronomical connection, but the castle has been there for a long time. It's a very old heritage site, and about, God, I could be wrong on the timeline now, but probably 20, maybe less than 20 years ago, they put the actual observatory in there, and they have an indoor small planetarium, like a mobile one indoors that people can go to. You also ask about Weathers Planetarium. The only other one of any size is really Armagh, and they have a very impressive state-of-the-art planetarium. So it seats about 100 people, maybe just shy of 100 people. But they've always been at the sort of cutting edge of, I think they were the first to use a video projection in a planetaria worldwide. So they've always been sort of at the edge of that, and they're looking at plans to update what they have. And then the Mayo, again, going back to where I'm from, we have nothing right now because we don't have the astronomical heritage, but we do have government support and department support to build a new planetarium and an observatory on our site, which will be quite a statement for a rural community. So it will be quite a high spec facility for the public, and it also embeds astronomy and science in our local community for the future. So it's really exciting.
That's really cool. I have to say that, those of us who live in the United States, we don't get to see castles all the time like you guys do. So the idea of like visiting a castle and getting to look through a telescope and stuff sounds very enticing. That's
Yeah,
so
no, it's great. And they've a great team in all of them, actually. All of the facilities here so far have a great team. And then we're the newcomers in Mayo from the astronomical part. We have the darkness, which obviously they don't have anymore because they're closer to town. So it's a nice compliment in a way that, we're coming to it new from the astronomical point of view, but they are losing the darkness. So we're trying to partner with them and work together because we have a lot to offer between us. So it's a good network in Ireland.
So if you were to plan the perfect night sky getaway for somebody, where would you have them go?
And are you referring to just Ireland here, or is this
Yeah, just
my
Ireland.
world?
Like if they were, if you would have them take a little tour of
Oh,
various places.
I mean, gosh, I'm going to be very biased, but I love where I'm at because we've put so much into to observing and taking the measurements here, and we know it's quite remote by Irish standards because of the mountain range. So the Mayo Dark Sky Park has a place called Letterkenny, where there's an old cottage that you can take shelter if it's a cold evening, and because you're in the national park, you can get a permit to camp there, do some stargazing. It's quite romantic, in that way. It's to have that, as they say, the 4,000s star accommodation, not 4-star accommodation, because that's something that we enjoy. So I do hike, and I do overnight camps quite a lot there, so I am a little bit biased. But Connemara, I've mentioned, that's beautiful. Again, it's on the western seaboard. It has a lovely, I suppose, tradition, and very Irish, as you'd see in the picture books. And Kerry is very well known for its tourism for a long time, so that has lovely skies, undoubtedly. But I'd say, yeah, Mayo's where the heart is for me.
Do you guys host any activities or like star parties or anything like that?
Well, we do. We host quite a few, but I suppose our flagship event would be in November. So it is cold, so be warned, wrap up. And the weather can be very changeable here. But what you do have in Ireland is you do have a lot of places for natural darkness, and that touches upon other things other than just astronomy. So, well-being, nature, engaging with tranquility and quietness that a lot of people have remarked they rarely get in other places. So what we've done, again, between the Friends of Mayo Dark Sky Park and the National Park, is we've hosted a festival in November, and it's split between the three communities by theme. So in Newport, there's science and astronomy. In Mulrani, they have environmental biodiversity talks. Last year, we had a talk from this wonderful woman who had been the first Irish woman to row solo across the Atlantic. So she spoke about her amazing experience and the night that she saw, the nights, many nights that she saw on her own in the middle of the Atlantic. So those kind of characters we try and get. We've got another lady coming this year who's going to talk about free diving. And what an experience is it, the darkness of that, but also the so it's the power that you feel from doing these kind of extreme sports in a way. But we just try and get unusual themes and speakers, as well as the obvious. So as well as doing the star party and the observing, and in Ballycroy, which is where the National Park headquarters, if you like, is, the visitor centre. We have arts and culture there, so you might have a talk on astrophotography or on arts and painting the night sky or something a little bit more arty.
Boy, paddling across the Atlantic.
I know she was something
Always
else.
so.
Look her up. Karen Weeks is her name. So it's an amazing story. So yeah, she's very cool.
I mean, it'd be because for me, I'm not comfortable with the water like that, the open water. It'd be scary enough for me in the day, but I'd be terrified at night. But then that view of the stars overhead, I can't even fathom what that would look like, because you are truly free from every speck of life. Wow.
And it's one thing, it's a good point that you make there, because when we do look at the stars, and I was out last night and I was in a very dark place in Mayo, and I was just gazing up, and I'll never be an astronaut, but that's the closest I'll ever come to really reminding myself that we are in space. We don't have to go to space. We're in space. And when we stand on this little very fragile pale blue dot, as they call it, and we look into the night sky, and you can see nothing. You can't see the horizon because it's so dark, but you can see a sky full of stars. It's quite a reminder of our fragility, I suppose, and that we're all part of the cosmos.
That's an amazing point. I honestly have never heard anybody say that we are in space. We just have our little speck of dirt to stand on to observe it. Oh, I'm going to be thinking about that all day. So you're also connected with Dark Skies Ireland, is that right? Tell us a little bit about Dark Skies Ireland.
So it's what we call an NGO, so a non-governmental organization, and it really came about. The name has been out there for a while because it became a chapter, what's called a chapter of the International Dark Sky Association. So that means it's an active group to try and mitigate light pollution measures. But in more recent years, we have sort of reformed it into an NGO, with participants from all over Ireland as both a committee and a network. And we are working with communities to encourage them to look at their lighting, but also, very importantly, working with government to try and get policy. We have no protection from light pollution. There's no legislation here, and there's no policy at national level. So we need organizations like that where we have a voice and we have expertise that government are openly admitting they don't know yet, because it's such a new technology with lighting and the changes that have happened so rapidly in and the research that's coming out so strongly now, to help us identify what we need to do. So that's what Dark Sky Ireland does.
What do you see as being some of the greatest accomplishments that, whether it's Friends of Mayo Dark Skies or Dark Skies Ireland, what are the greatest accomplishments you've seen so far, and what have been some of the biggest challenges?
Well, one of them, I suppose, covers both of those points, is both an accomplishment and a challenge, is getting the accreditation for the Dark Sky Park. It was a challenge with the workload. Sorry, it was an accomplishment after the workload, but it was actually the start of the journey. So when we look at that in hindsight, we got that accreditation for a gold tier in 2016. We had no idea how much work was to follow, and that's really, in keeping it in the reporting and the engagement with communities. So that was good for us. I suppose getting what I'm really doing now is I've been moved into research full time. So my job is now as the Dark Sky Park Development Officer, but it's also a research post. So I was lucky enough to put a proposal in and get a scholarship through the Irish Research Council to study dark skies and to study not so much on light pollution, but on the impact of losing darkness and, our communities, our policy, so all of the things that I suppose I'm just re referring to there, and to put that into a PhD, and it's the first study of its kind in Ireland. So I'm 2 years into it now. So hopefully another 2 and a bit years I'll be able to tell you the results. But so to me, at my stage of life, I'm no spring chicken. That's an accomplishment. As a community, things like our lighting changes, we are influencing our local authorities from the ground up. That's huge for us, very small communities, to be making the impacts and the inroads that we have done. And through the help of Dark Sky Ireland, and we've got experts like Professor Brian Espy, who I think you may have been in touch with in Dublin, who is a leading expert on light pollution. And people like that have been so supportive to little community groups around the country. So we feel we're making a bit of noise. So that's both challenges and accomplishments. So I suppose the two, sometimes there is no accomplishment without a challenge.
I'm thrilled to hear about the research you're doing, though, because it's really needed. There's pockets of research here and there that we're starting to connect together, because we're starting to understand that light pollution impacts every living thing on this planet. It's the plants, it's the little organisms, it's the insects, it's the all the animals, and of course humans too. And it's clearly we lose the night sky, but it goes so much deeper than that. And so I'm thrilled to hear that you're doing this research, and I can't wait to hear what comes out of it. That's awesome. So where can people learn more about Friends of Mayo Dark Skies and Dark Skies Ireland?
Okay, well, we have a Facebook page for the Friends of Mayo Dark Skies. It's not a website as such, but so at Mayo Dark Skies on all social media platforms, that's how you'll find us. So it's Mayo Dark Skies plural. We have a mayodarksky.ie is the park website for the Dark Sky Park, and mayodarksky.festival.ie is our festival website. And Dark Sky Ireland is simply darksky.ie, and that's our website for the national group. And I should have added, actually, we are going to be hosting in 2025 in Westport County Mayo. We're going to be hosting the Artificial Light at Night conference, which is really exciting for us. We put a bid in for that early last year, and it was announced at the recent Calgary event. They're every 2 years, and the conference moves around the world. So we're very excited to be the next host, and it's a collaboration between Dark Sky Ireland and the Friends of Mayo Dark Skies. So that'll be a, I suppose,
That's
a big one
awesome.
for
I
us.
think the last one was in the Canary Islands or someplace like that.
They've been in a lot of different places. The August one just gone was Calgary in Canada.
Calgary, okay. Yeah. Oh, so you were just there recently. Yeah.
Yeah, Brian. Yes, we were. We're represented.
Great. Well, I'm going to put the links to all of those in the show notes so that people can just scroll right down there and click on those and be able to find you guys online and see the work you're doing and be able to reach out to you if they want to plan a trip to Ireland and enjoy your night skies. Georgia, thank you so much for joining us. I'm really excited about putting Ireland on my list. Well, it's been on my list. I just can't wait to be able to get to that part of my list. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you too.
Are you wondering what to see in the night sky this fall? I've written a fall stargazing guide to help you make the most of your stargazing experiences right now. I've shared about the fall equinoxes and cross quarter days, the full moons of fall, constellations you can hunt for, star stories, and more. This guide is free to everyone on my blog. You can find it at nightskytourist.com/fall-stargazing-guide, or just click on the link in the show notes. Happy fall stargazing to you. I want to take a moment to celebrate something really, really special that happened to one of our podcast guests. Josh Dury was a guest on episodes 13 and 16. And we talked about how the night sky is changing because of light pollution and satellite constellations. And then we had a great chat about the summer solstice at Stonehenge, where Josh was working at the time. Josh is a phenomenal astrophotographer, and he recently won a prestigious award. So, Josh, welcome back to the podcast.
Lovely to see you, Vicky, and all your listeners on Night Sky Tourist.
So, Josh, tell us first of all, what is this award? Who sponsored it? And how did you find out that you won it?
Alrighty then. So, what I was shortlisted for, Vicky, was the International Astronomy Photographer of the Year competition. So, this is a yearly photography competition which is hosted by the Royal Observatory of Greenwich. And it was only this year that when I checked my spam folder, I saw one of my images, which was titled The Enigma of the North, had been shortlisted. So, just to give you some context, this image is of the almighty Callanish Stone Circle. It's an enigmatic monument on the Isle of Lewis in the Outer Hebrides of Scotland. And it was only when I was on this trip back in 2022 in the summer, there was this rare period of clear skies. And so to be able to capture some of the darkest skies from the United Kingdom is something of a rarity on the Isle of Lewis. So to be able to capture this image, and bearing in mind, Vicky, I hadn't picked up a camera in over 6 months, and so I wanted to give it my all. So when I took this photograph, I couldn't believe the results which were yielded from this. And so when I found out the image was shortlisted, it went on to so many other things. So to eventually be broadcast on the BBC here in the United Kingdom, ITV as well, and it hit, all the major photography titles. It was quite an achievement. So after that, to be able to be invited or summoned rather to the Royal Observatory of Greenwich and to see your image there on display, being shortlisted of one of 140 images, and to find out as well that there were for this competition alone 4,500 submissions from around the world. Honestly, I couldn't believe my luck. It was an amazing experience.
That's fantastic. Congratulations to you for that. And I'm going to have a link so people can come see your image on your website. It's absolutely awe-inspiring. It's astounding. And it makes me realize that I don't know anything about photography.
It's a very complex, way of looking at the universe, Vicky, but I think the most important thing is astrophotography. I have found in my years of taking photos is what connects us to the night sky. And especially as we have both learned through our advocacy with the International Dark Skies Association, it's a means of being connected with the night sky to learn about this impact of light pollution. And that's what my story is through astrophotography. That's the reason I take photos, is to show really how the impact of light pollution is changing our environment and our open window to the universe.
So I know that you have just recently rebuilt your website. So how can people find you online?
Okay, guys, so the way a place to look would be on www.joshdurifoto-media.com.
So I'm going to put the link for that in the show notes, or people can come to nightskytourist.com/77. Thanks, Josh.
And thank you for having me, Vicky.
It's time for our tour of the night sky for the end of October 2023. Pause the podcast, turn off all the lights, and I'll meet you outside under the stars. Tonight, I just want you to spend some time enjoying the night sky while I help you to get to know Saturn a little bit better. Saturn is one of my favorite things to look at with my telescope, and I never get tired of looking at it. The first time I saw it was through a friend's telescope, and I remember feeling overwhelmed with awe. If you have binoculars or a backyard telescope, pause the podcast and go get them set up before we go any further. If you don't have any equipment, that's totally fine. Sit back, relax, and enjoy it with a naked eye. Saturn is located to the west of Jupiter tonight, and Jupiter is that really bright-looking star towards the east. It's currently sitting in the constellation of Aquarius, but since Aquarius is made mostly of dimmer stars, you might have some trouble spotting it, thanks to light pollution. So if you're unsure where to find Saturn, use a stargazing app. And as always, be sure to turn your screen brightness down and set the screen to night mode so that you can prevent the loss of night vision. Saturn is the sixth planet from the sun, and it's the second largest after Jupiter. 760 Earths could fit inside this ringed planet. It's twice the distance from Earth as Jupiter, which is why it looks so much smaller and dimmer than Jupiter. And it takes light 1 hour and 29 minutes to reflect back to us. In other words, as you look at Saturn right now, that's actually where it was almost an hour and a half ago. But it took that long for the light to reach your eyes. It takes Saturn 29 Earth years to complete one orbit around the sun, but its day is only a little more than 10 and a half hours long. So this makes Saturn noticeably bulge at the center. Saturn is less dense than water, so if you had a swimming pool that was large enough to hold it, it would float. And the reason is that the planet is made almost entirely of gas, so it has no solid surface, just like its neighbor Jupiter. Astronomers believe that 2 tons of Saturn's mass came from the Earth, which creates some really interesting questions in my mind. Galileo was the first person to look at the planet with a telescope, and he thought it had handles or arms sticking out from it. But 45 years later, after telescopes got a little bit better, another astronomer announced that Saturn actually had rings orbiting it. The beautiful rings are part of what makes us love it so much. They're mostly made of ice and rock. Some are as small as a grain of sugar, and some are as big as a house. A 2016 study showed that the debris that makes up the rings could be the remains of dwarf planets that broke apart in an extremely distant past. Saturn's massive size, its location in the solar system, and gravitational pull lets it steer many dangerous asteroids away from Earth, so it does a really important job of protecting us. The last time I shared extensively about Saturn on this podcast, I told everyone that it had 82 known moons. You're going to be amazed to know that astronomers have found a heck of a lot more moons since then. According to NASA, Saturn has 146 moons in its orbit. And this number doesn't even include the many thousands of moonlets that are embedded within the dense rings. Take a moment and imagine Earth with 146 moons. What would that night sky look like? Titan is the largest, and it's even bigger than Mercury. In fact, it's the second largest moon in the entire solar system. Jupiter's Ganymede is the largest, and our moon is only the fifth largest. Some of Saturn's moons may be able to actually support life because they contain water, and one of them even has about 100 spouting geysers. Saturn is named after the Roman god of wealth and agriculture. In the ancient Greek culture, Saturn represented the god Cronos, the god of time. In Hindu astrology, Saturn is called Shani, and he judges everyone based on the good and the bad deeds that they did during their life. In the ancient Chinese and Japanese culture, it is known as Earth Star, and that's based on their 5 elements. Our favorite day of the week was named in honor of Saturn, Saturday. But it was the Romans who had the most extensive myths about the planet. They believed the god was the father of Jupiter, Neptune, Pluto, and a whole bunch of others. Every year in December, the Romans celebrated the festival of Saturnalia at the time of the winter solstice. It was a time of feasting, role reversals, free speech, gift giving, and revelry. And some of these traditions have found their way into the Christmas holiday and are still celebrated in various forms to this day. You can find links for everything mentioned in this episode in the show notes or visit nightskytourist.com/77. That's nightskytours.com/77. Thank you for joining me for another episode of the Night Sky Tours podcast. If you enjoy the Night Sky Tours podcast, please show your support by subscribing to it in your podcatcher and leave a written review. Your reviews are really important to me and they help others discover the podcast. Be sure to visit nightskytours.com for great articles and resources. And while you're there, sign up for the newsletter for exclusive content. We'll see you here again in 2 weeks. Until then, keep looking up.